the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast. And Jason called me last night and said, hey, I think we need to do a special issue with the ongoing weather pattern that's about to hit us. So that's kind of what we're going to talk about today. Or is that what you had in mind, Jason?
Yeah, I mean, we're right here on the, you know, at the end of this crop. I say the end, but, you know, definitely closer to the end than the beginning. And now we got not one, but two hurricanes. And I don't know if anybody knows where those silly things are going.
Back to back to back coming in. But,
you know, the one, I guess the second one, which Marco, it looks like it's trending west, which is definitely not good for our neighbors.
I thought Marco was the, no, Laura's the first one.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. But Marco's hitting first. It's hitting land. It formed after he was Tropical Depression 14.
Gotcha.
And the other one was 13. But it looks like that one's going to trend down the coast, you know, which is not good for Louisiana. But
one's going to peel off and go to Texas. Yeah. And one's going to hit us dead square.
Maybe we'll miss some of that. And the other one, man, you know, at one point it was kind of coming right up the river, and now it's kind of airing to the west, but it's not even in the Gulf yet. So
the last I heard is right by Cuba, and
right,
depending on if it sidesteps it or goes across the land, is going to depend on how bad it gets.
Yeah, and I mean, that's always, you know, whether they come across Florida or not kind of dictates, you know, what they do once they get out in the Gulf. So I just thought it was important to talk about it, and so what we're going to do is we're going to have the other guys that work in the specific crops, Eric and Trent and Brian and Brendan, and of course Bobby, already here working on rice, just kind of where the crop's at and, you know, what potential effects, you know, nobody knows, you know, how much rain and wind and combination that we're going to get. But
and I think this is a unique opportunity because at the stage in the game we're at, even though we're closing in on the fire, every one of these crops will be affected differently if this turns into a major rainfall event for us.
Yeah. And I think, too, you know, every one of these crops, and we've had, you know, all those guys, you know, talk about it over the last few weeks, the whole crop looks really good right now. I mean, there's some, you know, fields here and there, but for the most part, all the major commodities that we grow look really good at this stage of the game, you know, August, you know, basically what amounts to the last week of August.
And in this low commodity market we're in, we don't need one more wrench thrown into
the plans. No, man, you got to ring the bell if you can ring the bell, because you got to get all you can get when the price is what it is.
And like you said, we've maybe not had the best crop we've ever had, but we've got a really stout crop out there.
Yeah, no, certainly, yeah, it's not a – I mean, we don't know. I mean, we haven't cut enough of it to know, but it looks good. You know, the fields look good right now, so hopefully the yield is there.
Well, I hope so, and let's, you know, we're not going to have your entomologist on. We'll probably have them on sometime this week talking about what all this rain might do to the worms and stuff there, but I think they're getting ready to wind it all down anyway and call her good, right?
Man, they were spraying this morning. I think I saw when I came through, I think I saw that Mudmaster looping around on the turn row first thing this morning, so they evidently got some stuff still going on.
Well, y'all stay peeled, and we'll get you that bug information out sometime this week. But right now, we're going to pay tribute to the hurricane and go from there.
So first on the phone, we got Dr. Eric Larson to tell us a little bit about corn. So good morning, Eric. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. How about y'all?
We're doing well. So, Eric, I know we got quite a bit of corn out, at least over here around where we are. So why don't you just give us a little update on where we are on the corn harvest and kind of what the status of the crop is.
Well, most of the corn is now obviously reached physiological maturity. The crop in general is later than what it normally is historically. A lot of that revolves around the lack of a defined planting window during March this year, so we have a lot more April corn this year than normal. And like I said, believe it or not, we still got a lot of corn that just reached physiological maturity or is reaching physiological maturity as late as this weekend or, you know, maybe this week for some of the corn that was planted in May in the northern part of the state.
So, how far along you think we are on harvest, just guessing on percentages?
Today's NAS estimate has not come out yet, but last week we were at 11% statewide, and that is about a week behind normal from what it normally is. I expect this week it's going to be about 25% in that ballpark.
I mean, they're rolling hard over here. I mean, I saw a couple fields this morning that had gotten cut over the weekend that I guess I probably, if you'd asked me Friday, I would not have expected them to be gone when I drove by on Monday morning. So with these storms coming, what do you anticipate? I mean, not having any idea exactly where either one of them are going to go, but just kind of what's your gut feeling on how corn can withstand a weather event, you know, like a hurricane?
Or what's the, you know, number one thing that's influenced by corn? Is it lodging at this point? Is it something else? What, you know, what's the number one thing you're concerned about with the storm?
The number one concern as far as damage potential is from the wind from storms causing significant lodging. And obviously corn is a tall plant that has an ear, you know, somewhere thereabouts, you know, 4 feet off the ground, and being able to withstand that those high winds is difficult for those plants, and laying the plants over may not cause a lot of issue with the grain quality, but it's certainly going to increase harvest losses and slow down the harvest progress.
Yeah, I figure with a corn header, corn's probably one of the hardest things to pick up off the ground and get it all in there since it's not a reel type.
Yeah, there are aftermarket reels and things that you can put on, but picking corn up off the ground that, you know, is laid over horizontally or 6 inches tall is quite a difficult process anyway. So those reels help the flow of the stalks and the plants into the machine, but you've got to be able to get the spouts of the header underneath of the plants in order to be able to pick them up at all. So it really doesn't help help picking up any of the grain just from having a header on or having a reel on the machine anyway from a corn standpoint.
So the short takeaway is, for corn at least, not really concerned about grain quality. Biggest concern is lodging and harvest efficiency calls because of that.
The other thing to think about too, I was trying to think of anything else to talk about this morning. Getting wet grain out of the field and not having somewhere to store it appropriately or handling wet grain has been potentially could be a big problem because of aflatoxin. Keeping grain on a truck overnight or putting grain in a rice bin that wet grain in a rice bin and drying it over an extended time period can't cause fungal growth to escalate very quickly in that bin if you can't get it dry within a quick time period. So that could escalate the aflatoxin levels of the grain really, really quickly if they don't have the drying equipment on farm to dry it during what we consider to be a realistic goal, which is down to 15% or less within 24 hours.
So what I hear you saying is, don't try to stick wet grain in a rice bin. You better have a corn dryer if you're going to approach that.
And I know with the pressure on, you know, with a lot of corn in the field, storms approaching and you know, not wanting to, or trying to do the best to get it out of the field, then a lot of folks could do stuff that they don't normally do or not familiar with. So that's a significant concern that could potentially cause some significant problems.
All right, Eric. Well, we appreciate it, man. We'll catch up with you after the thing's over with. So I texted Trent and told him we were ready to talk to him, and we had to wait for a few minutes because the text didn't go through because evidently he's been on the phone.
Naturally, he was talking about what do I do to soybeans before a hurricane.
Yeah. So, Trent, good to hear from you, man.
Good morning.
How's everything looking in the soybean world?
Well, every, everybody is itching to get some beans desiccated and have a start on getting these combines moving through.
Yeah, I saw a couple fields, you know, that it, on the way to work this morning that had been desiccated probably over the weekend, and because there's still a little bit of green in them, and then those look like dry land fields. So I haven't seen a big block yet, but I hadn't been anywhere either. So don't base that on me.
There's a big block I saw just north of town the other day.
Okay.
But yeah, for the most part, it's a lot of those early dry land beans that I've seen hit.
So Trent, desiccants, big rain events. How do those two jive?
Man, it's a lot of debate on it, and I guess, you know, one way to answer it is just to look at the pros and the cons of both ways. You know, you might make the argument if we knock the leaves off and don't get too much rain out of this thing, then we're going to be happy we did it because things can dry out. The air will be moving through there. We'll likely have some acres that would be ready to put a combine in, you know, after it did dry up from this rain. But on the flip side of that, when you're looking at these forecasts that keep moving every 12 hours and trying to figure out how much rain we're really going to get, you know, in certain situations, it's likely not something that we'd want to do, just because if we get so much rain, the crop would progress how it's going to progress anyway. We might be wasting some money in some cases. If we get significant amounts of rain, we may get some damage out of it. So there's just a lot of moving parts to this thing.
Well, I think it's a lot of unknowns because, you know, like you stated just a minute ago, we had tracks last night on these potential hurricanes that changed in the course of the time we slept and woke up. So I think the thing that concerns me a little is with all of them, we're slated to be on the east side.
Yeah, and now you never want to be on the east side of a storm.
That's right.
That's always the bad side. And any of you, know, like we were talking about before we hit record, it's just a matter of how far on the east side are you. You know, if that the one Laura, if she keeps going west a little bit, then we may be, you know, out of the. We may still be on the east side of the storm, but we might be out of the bad part. But, you know, if she keeps pulling straight north, no good.
So, Trent, I know y'all been working on harvest aids a lot. And I guess the thing that you – that old adage of don't put all your chicken eggs in one basket and don't count them before they hatch. Well, I think doing things in anticipation of a hurricane that may turn and go west, like Jason said, and put us out of it, how are you telling people how to handle these harvest aids? Do you do every acre? Do you just do what you can cut in a day? I mean, what's your take?
Well, one good thing, I guess, about the timing of this particular storm system is we're just kind of on the cusp of acres that are getting ready. You know, if we didn't have the hurricane in the equation, we would have quite a few acres that are getting ready to be sprayed over the next few days. So we're not, you know, behind, I guess, is my point. You know, in this particular week, in this particular storm and situation, I guess my thoughts are, if we're going to spray any, let's don't spray at all. Let's just spray enough to get started, you know, once the thing moves out and things get dry, and then we can reevaluate additional acres and treat those after the system moves through.
Yeah, because unlike Eric, you know, when we were talking with him earlier, he was talking about lodging and picking up corn. One thing when you start talking about soybeans in Mississippi that's different is we've got an awful lot of buckshot beans, and rain and big amounts of rain and buckshot don't make it easy to put heavy equipment in a field.
That's right.
Trent, assuming I've got a field that is desiccated and we get a significant amount of rain, maybe it's buckshot field like what Bobby was talking about, and, you know, in addition to getting a lot of rain on it, then it's, you know, several more days getting the field dried back up so, you know, I can get my equipment in there. How long will a desiccated soybean pod hold without shattering?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think that's one of those it-depends kind of answers. I think it depends on how much rain we're going to get. If we get on the lower side of the forecast and then things come out, the sun comes out, dries things back out, I don't think we'll notice it. But if we catch a rain, and then this storm system moves out and we catch more rain, or we get so much out of this that we'll get some localized flooding and things like that, then we're going to have some quality issues, some shattering, and some damage issues as well.
All right, well, Bobby, it looks like with soybeans, it's a wait and see game. So
I think so. We're a lot more earlier into the harvest season in soybeans than we were with corn.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, Trent. Well, with what Jason said, you know, and what you said about desiccating, does your opinion on desiccating changing if you're in Tunica or Natchez with the storm coming up? I mean, does latitude play effect in it for you?
Yeah, sure, it will. I mean, everywhere, I guess, depending on where this thing makes landfall, we're going to see different impacts from it. And, the other thing to take into consideration, I guess, is that the planting date variation between latitudes. We're going to have different stages of beans depending on where you're standing in the state, and also different forecasts, I guess, in terms of total amounts of rainfall expected and things of that nature. So we may be able to weather this storm a little bit better just depending on, you know, where this track actually ends up going.
Well, I think that's it. I mean, we're, you know, if we had the same conversation tomorrow, it could be very different, just because, like we said, these things, the forecast is changing, you know, throughout the day. It did yesterday, and I'm sure it will today too. So, you know, we're just telling y'all, you know, what we know, what the best information we got at the time. So, Trent, man, we appreciate it, and we'll let you get back to working the phone, because I know, you know, a lot of folks are got questions right now. So we appreciate you taking a few minutes with us.
Thanks, guys.
All right, guys, we've got another caller in today, and we're having our new cotton specialist, Brian Paralisi, on the phone right now. So, Brian, we've heard from Eric, we've heard from Trent about how their respective crops are going to potentially be influenced by this hurricane. When we start talking about cotton, it's a little bit different than our other crops we grow, because your fiber is physically open to the environment once that bowl bust open. So give us a little take about where we're at right now with most of the cotton acres, and how do we need to proceed forward with these two storms barreling down on us?
Yeah, okay. Well, first of all, good morning, everybody. With that being said, we're watching the tropics, and I'm no stranger to cotton and hurricanes. I've been through this before. You always kind of get a little nervous this time of year anyway. Our cotton now is nodes above white flower zero to two. We're probably past our last harvestable bloom at this point. There's some bowls are cracking, which is, that raises some concern if we're to get a 5-inch rain, you know, in order to catch some of these bowls at the bottom opening, which is our valuable bowls. But we're not really quite ready for defoliation either, so we're kind of in that middle ground. I would say, on average, we're about 530 to 540 heat units into our way to 850, which would be a defoliation trigger.
So we'd still be, you know, and I'm just guessing, Brian, 10 days, 2 weeks away on some.
Yeah, we're averaging 19 to 21 heat units a day, something like that. So, you know, however long you can kind of do the math on that. Yeah, so probably about 10 days to 2 weeks on the earlier planted. The concern I see a lot of times when it's, you're on the early side of defoliation, which would be now, and you're to get a system come through with 24 hours of tropical storm force winds, it can really rattle those leaves around. A lot of times we'll flip them over, and, you know, where the stomates are open to the sky whenever after the storm passes, then it gets really hot and humid. And I've seen it have some early defoliation just due to the stress on the leaf. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
We've all seen that at times. And, you know, a lot of the cotton right now is,
it's getting ready to be done.
Yeah, it's just starting to look, you know, it's a lot of fields got an odd color to it, just kind of starting to look ragged. It's not that those nice, even, flat fields that, you know, we've seen for the past, you know, several weeks as it was growing on out.
And I've been getting an awful lot of pictures of purple cotton, and I think it's just an environmental thing. It's not phosphorus deficiency. It's that cotton is about ready to give up the ghost, or as Jason said a couple of weeks ago with some of the other crops, it's getting to be that ugly time of the year.
Like you say, I think that's a lot of just physiological maturity going on.
Yeah, we're, like you said, we're a little bit earlier in cotton than we are in these other crops with the potential for these storms coming. So with the cotton that is maybe having some bolls starting to crack open at the bottom, these newer varieties, speak a little bit about them being a little more tight locked than what we had in the past, and they might not get strung out as bad.
Yeah, I mean, that would be the hope. I mean, if it's already open, it's going to fare better than if it caught it, it just at a crack. But like you were saying, the newer varieties hold the cotton in the lock better. You know, 20 years ago, when it was completely open, it didn't take a whole lot of rain. I mean, and very little wind just to knock it on the ground. And obviously, varieties are different, but it should fare better than the earlier.
Not having any idea what varieties they are, but, you know, with the bad falls we've had the past couple of years, I mean, you just drive down the road and you see a field that, you know, you would have expected, you know, when we were kids, you would have expected to see it strung out real bad, and it's not. You know, it's held pretty good. So that's been a great advancement for the cotton guys, for sure.
For sure. And, you know, obviously it's going to fare. It seems like whenever you have leaves like now, you can weather this kind of storm a little better anyway than later. But and we also have the advantage of varieties with tighter locked cotton. So we can hope for the best. It doesn't seem too menacing, but, you know, these things can change on you. And, you know, we don't exactly know at this point what's coming.
Yeah, is lodging a concern? We talked about lodging with the other guys, and I know we got some heavy plants out there right now.
Yeah, it could be, but for the most part, a lot of the cotton I've seen, it has a nice stature to it. It's not incredibly tall. I'm sure there's some exceptions to that, but this year, when people applied ticks appropriately, and then with the heavy boll load that we had early, you know, that was a plant growth regulator in itself. So I would say, by and large, most of our cotton has a really good size stalk compared to years past.
Well, that's good.
Well, we could probably save defoliation for another day. That's a topic of its own.
Yeah.
But we're getting close to that. And, you know, let's hope for the best. With, it looks like Hurricane Laura will be the most, or tropical storm, whichever it is, when it makes landfall, is going to have the biggest impact on our area. So hope for the best.
All right. Well, we'll be watching Laura more than Marco, and we appreciate your thoughts and insights on what's going to happen to the cotton crop.
All right. Sounds good, Bobby and Jason. Y'all have a good one.
Next, we got Brendan Zerweller on the phone. Good morning, Brendan. How you doing, man?
Good morning. I'm doing good. How about yourself?
We're doing good. So Brendan was on a couple weeks ago, or I say that was a couple weeks ago, Bobby, sometime.
It was a while ago, maybe a couple weeks, maybe a week. Who knows? It all runs together.
Well, fairly recently, Brendan was actually over here at Stoneville and sat down and talked with us about the peanut crop. So we're grateful to have him back. So, Brendan, we've just been talking to the other guys about, you know, the possibilities of these storms coming through Mississippi this week. And so where are we on peanuts, and how does a storm potentially affect that crop?
Yes. So we're about 2 weeks out from digging our earliest, our first planting dates, so the earlier crop. So as far as any physical impact of the storms on peanut, I'd say it'd probably be minimal. Like you said, we're 2 weeks out, so as long as the peanuts are in the ground, they're safe for now, and we don't really have any issues with lodging with peanuts. So it actually, a little bit of rain in some parts of the state may be welcomed right now to finish the crop out, and then as long as it doesn't stay wet after that, we should have pretty good digging conditions as well.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, we don't think of peanuts like we do other crops, I guess, or at least I don't, peanut being in the ground, being protected versus, you know, all the other crops being, we're harvesting the above ground portions, not the below ground. Now you say a little bit of rain to do us good. Where's the point where a little bit becomes too much?
Yeah, I would say if you get enough rain and there's mud. So really, it's kind of a fine line, because if it's real dry, you can bust up a lot of quads. But then if it's too wet and it's muddy and kind of smear, you know, like the soil would smear, that's too much. So really what you're aiming for is enough moisture for the soil to be friable, so it really breaks up well. I guess to compare it, it would almost be similar to judging whether you should till a field.
Okay. Well, I think a lot of people can relate to that. So I know I can. I might have to go look at one of these diggers, because I don't guess I know what the apparatus looks like. So Brennan, on the rain and thinking about, you know, big rains possibly and water standing on the field, how long can a peanut underground, obviously, how long can it sit with standing water over its head? You know, I'm talking about the actual harvestable part of the crop, not necessarily the plant not being underwater, just the you know, water ponded and, you know, middles full of water, things like that.
Yeah, I think it, at this point, it could tolerate it quite a while. So I don't, even if there's some ponding of water for 3 or 4 days, I wouldn't really see it as much of an issue as far as seeing pod rot from that. One thing that I would possibly be concerned about with the storm is sometimes after these tropical storms, you can get development of late leaf spot come in. And so that's something I'd really keep an eye out on to see if there's any symptoms developed. Because on the later planted crop, we still have about 6-7 weeks probably until digging. So that's definitely, there's enough time to have significant defoliation from late leaf spot, which would cause you to have to dig earlier than possible.
And I would assume if you're digging earlier than possible, you're going to have a lot of immature peanuts down there that aren't going to go for good quality or weight.
Yep. Yeah. So the earlier you are, if you're before that optimum harvest timing, then yeah, you can get a reduced yield. And if you're real early, and then definitely it can impact your grade, which is also an economic factor there. So a grower gets paid on both yield and grade.
Do we have an effective treatment for gray leaf spot?
Yeah, there's quite a few. I would say if depending on whether you have leaf spot present or not, there's some cheaper preventatives like chlorothalonil, which would be just a preventative spray if you were concerned about it developing afterwards. And then also there's a whole bunch of fungicides as far as they have more curative activity too if it's already present.
Okay, so it sounds like peanuts, Bobby, are probably about as good a shape on them as any with a, you know, a potential storm coming.
Yeah, peanuts. I'm glad we lumped peanuts real close to cotton, because cotton was getting better because it's later than corn or beans, and then peanuts is probably, as Brendan said earlier, best case scenario where we're at in the growing season, and they are grown under the ground.
Yeah,
yeah. I would say we're probably in better shape of these storms coming in now than in a few weeks when we already have peanuts laying on the ground. Then it can be more problematic, because with them inverted and you get rain on top of them, it can, you know, just have them sit out in the fields. Staying wet, and then you can start getting diminished peg strength on the pods and have issues losing pods, picking them up with the picker on the second pass.
Yeah, I can imagine that'd be a problem. So, all right, Brendan, well, we certainly appreciate it, man. And
yeah, no, I appreciate you giving me a shout out.
All right, man. See you, Brendan. Well, Bobby, that wraps up the guys that are going to call in. So, naturally, we have one crop left to talk about as far as the Delta is concerned, and that would be rice. So I know we got quite a bit of rice drained, some rice turning. hurricanes and rice have a long, colorful history. So what are your thoughts on that?
As do you and I have a long, colorful history with rice and hurricanes.
Yeah.
Go back a long ways. You know, man, that's the last thing a rice farmer wants to hear. And I guess we're so unique compared to the other crops that we have to dry this thing up to get in the field. So just a little bit of rain can set us back. Not discounting wind and everything else, but just a little bit of rain can set us back. And then if we try to rush and get it out, then we got ruts and all that. So, you know, where we're at right now, we started cutting samples late last week on our earliest rice. Over the weekend, a few full fields got harvested, but I think that earliest planted rice, we were raring and ready to go this week. So we was probably going to start, you know, in that Tuesday, Wednesday range. And now this might push us back depending on how much rain we get.
Yeah, and just like with the other ones, man, it's a wait and see game. You know, one of the things, or more than one thing, but contrast rice with some of the other crops. You mentioned draining it. But then, you know, Eric mentioned, you know, corn taking rain pretty good. I mean, it's covered up, and then it's got a real hard, you know, grain. Rice, man, it's top heavy because the whole, you know,
the
marketable part of the crop is at the top of the plant. Two, it's at the top of the plant, so it's exposed to the elements. And so there's just a lot of things that can go wrong when you start talking about rice and big weather events, you know, right at the end of the crop cycle.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, we do have a lot of issues with rice. And then if you're thinking on a biomass perspective, you know, corn's got a lot of biomass, but it's in a stalk, right? And you look at some of our biomass, and especially with the hybrids, that it's just so thick and dense. We've got to chew through all that, put all that through the combine if we get this wind and rain to lay it on the ground, which lessens our harvest efficiency from two standpoints. We got to go really slow, and then we're running a lot of material through there. But talking about our grain being top heavy and lodging, it can get matted on the ground and have rice straw on top of it, and then we start getting into quality issues. If it's dipping in the water and we've got water sitting there, we start getting quality issues. So even though rice is in a hard shell, it can absorb that water very rapidly if it's in that type of environment, either under straw where it's not getting sunlight or sitting down in the water.
You know, just with the, like with the other crops, particularly soybeans, because I think, you know, rice and soybeans right now are probably the two that are most susceptible to problems just at the stage that we're at.
Yeah, just getting started, you know, where corn's finishing up. Rice and soybeans are, we're sitting there waiting on go. We got the combines parked. We've been cutting samples, hitting those early fields, ready to get keyed up. And I guess, kind of like Brian said earlier, the first one looks like it's going to turn and we're not going to have a lot of problems out of it. But this second one that's eyeballing the Mississippi River.
Yeah, it's just an unknown. And we're, unfortunately, it's going to be a couple more days before we have a clearer picture.
Well, you think about
where it's gonna go.
You think about just if the eye shifts 30 miles further to the west, that puts us 30 miles further to the east, and that could be the difference in 2 to 3 inches of rain.
No, certainly it could. You know, I think back to years where we've had, you know, multiple hurricanes in close proximity, and a lot of times, you know, after a few years, you can't remember them. But, you know, 2008. I think was Gustav and Ike. Yeah. And man, I remember Gustav came through and just dumped and dumped and dumped rain. And then just a few days, maybe a week or two later, Ike came through just like a freight train. You know, it rained, but the storm was moving really fast, and it got on through and, you know, moved on up the country. So I think right now the best thing we can hope for, I mean, it looks like we're going to get some. You
yeah,
know, it's just a matter of how much. And I think the thing to hope for is that it's going to be moving pretty good and won't stall out on top of us and create a lot more problems But of course, you know that if it's moving fast, you got the wind to deal with, so that's not necessarily completely positive either.
And I think with a rice crop, in my opinion, I would rather have some rain, like in that 1 to 4 inch range, than I'd rather have the wind, because you're going to get the rain with it, with the wind. And if it comes through fast, like you said, and you get those heavy winds, we're going to lay it down and be wet, rather than if it kind of moves on through and we just get wet and we're still standing and it's just going to take longer to get in the field. And then we may rut up the field, and then that goes back to we need a good, smooth harvest season to prepare for next year, because the last couple years we've rutted fields.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, without question. A good harvest season does so much for us, and we'll get into that later on in the fall.
Well, I got one thing to ask you, because I know when you were in Louisiana, you did a lot of work on it. And I've got a couple calls over Friday and Saturday about, do we pull the trigger and chlorate the rice? And I know you did a lot of work with chlorating rice when you were functioning as an agronomist in Louisiana. So take me back to that time and tell me what's going to happen if I start chlorating my rice.
So, one, sodium chlorate's the only thing labeled for desiccating rice. So the paraquat option is not on the table like it is, you know, for soybeans. So I know we use a lot of paraquat as a desiccant in the area, but that's not an option for rice. And two, my, you know, response to those questions when I get them is I would chlorate my rice, or I would only chlorate my rice if I had a combine cranked up sitting on the turn row ready to drop into the field and cut it.
Didn't you say 3 days?
3 days. And your milling starts going to pot quickly. The difference between 3 days and 7 days, I mean, it's been a long time since I've looked at those specific numbers, but there was a big difference in the milling quality with a harvest 7 days after a chlorate application compared with 3 days. So at this point, no, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, you gotta wait on the rain and see, because and kind of like Trent was saying with the soybeans, is we don't want to get so far ahead of ourselves that we hurt ourselves by trying to do something on every acre. So if you are going to pull the trigger and try the chlorate against Jason's wishes, you know, I think Friday was a different day than today with the rain
coming
in.
Certainly. You know, but the thing to worry about, just say, I mean, it's already, you know, late morning now, but say you had desiccated a field first thing this morning. Well, depending on how big that storm grows to, once it gets into the Gulf and then makes landfall, and then, of course, we talked about the uncertainty of the track, you start getting rain bands. You know, you might be getting rain bands 48 hours, you know, 36 hours before the actual heavy part of the storm gets to you. So, you know, you could have got some out this morning, but if it starts, you start getting some showers even tomorrow afternoon, well, you're
the gig's
no good.
Up.
Yeah.
Yeah, the gig's up. So, for all our crops, let's keep that in mind. But again, rice specifically, we know it takes a lot of time to dry a rice field out to get ready to harvest. You know, you don't have as much airflow through that dense mass of vegetation like you would through a desiccated soybean field or a corn field, that, you know, you're going to get a lot of airflow just to dry it up to put the combine in.
Yeah. Yeah, just getting the plant dried so it'll
go through the
feed well through the machine.
And that's what I'm talking about. Now, I'm not talking about dry grain. I'm talking about just not a big moist clump of everything running through your $500,000 instrument.
Right. So, folks, you know, hopefully we've shed some light on the situation for you this morning. And again, we have no idea. I mean, it's Monday, and so we're just guessing at what could potentially happen. But hopefully, you know, for your respective crop, we've given you some information that you can lean on until we know for sure how severe the rain events could be. So we're going to jump off for now. We've got a little lengthy on this episode, but we thought it was important to bring it to you in the format that we did. So, of course, if we can do anything for you, give us a call and after the storm is over, and we'd be happy to help you however we can.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.